So we want to, as Fred mentioned, we want to pick up at Genesis 29. I have my screen set in such a way so you'll probably see the side of my face, but that's okay. Let's begin with just a review of Genesis, just kind of being the coordinator of the Wednesday night study. I just wanted to go back and just refresh ourselves on a few things. And I wanted to share my screen, Neil. Just refresh me again on
Okay, give me a
what we're
second. I'm going to give
sure,
you
no
rights
problem.
to
Yeah,
do
absolutely.
that.
Not a problem.
All right. I gave you rights. So to do that, you can on the bottom there should be a green share screen button. And you click that.
Sorry about that.
And then you select which window you want to share. And then at the bottom right, I think there's a blue share button that will kick it off. It's a green
I do
share
Zoom all the
screen
time. I
button.
just don't do the share screen very often. I try to find. Sorry
It
about that.
might be under more.
Is it on the green bar on top?
Oh, I apologize. You know what? I was looking in PowerPoint. I apologize. There we go. Okay. Got it. There it is. Got it. Okay. So you should see. There it is. Do you see the Wauwatosa Bible's chapel splash screen, everyone?
Yep.
Okay, great. Okay, so I just wanted to do a quick review then.
So, Ray, further on, if you click on view slideshow, then it'll go full screen.
Got slideshow. Slideshow.
From beginning on the far left.
Okay, there we go. Okay, can you see the? Okay, great. So just to summarize, and you've seen this once before, if you would recall that Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3 is the introduction to Abraham or Abram. It's a central passage of the book of Genesis. As you recall, the blessing that's given to him, it basically says to bless or to curse Abram would be to bless or curse Abram's God. Thus begins the program that was so desperately needed in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, which served to show that a blessing was needed, as we saw all of the confusion and all of the cataclysmic events that occurred. This was the call. Abraham responded to it in faith, and then the promises made to him became formulated later under covenant conditions in Genesis 15. It's important to keep in mind that Genesis is a book that Moses is writing to the Exodus Jews, the children of Israel. You ask why, and of course, it's to remind them of where they came from and that it is God who has separated a people to himself, the Israelites, the apple of his eye. In chapter 12, the direction of the book of Genesis changes, and we learn that Abram was taken out of a pagan land. And as we'll see tonight again, amazing, astounding promises are made to him and to Isaac and Jacob, and these promises later become part of the formal Abrahamic covenant. Moses reminds the Israelites of the faith of Abram and that God-pleasing faith is displayed by obeying God. Do you remember this map? You should. I stole it from Jeff. And basically, if you look at the arrow colored yellow, that's where Jacob begins his journey in Beersheba. You can barely see it, but it's by the Dead Sea there. And he goes all the way up to Paran Adam, I should Aram, I should say, into the town of Haran. Let's take a look, let's take a review of Genesis 28 here. So before Jacob departed, Isaac gave him the pure and legitimate blessing. This is the blessing that is given when Isaac finally decides to obey the Lord and not try to undo what the Lord had in mind. Before, of course, Jacob gets the blessing by deceit, but now Abraham, Isaac gives him the pure blessing here under calm conditions. And there was no holding back, no. Isaac specifically passed on to Jacob the blessing God had given both to Abraham and to Isaac. Isaac reiterates or repeats the blessing from God Almighty, or the other name is for God, in this case, God Almighty is El Shaddai. the abundant one, the almighty one, pertaining to prosperity and the land. He urged his son to go to Padan Aram. And finally, those inheriting the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant were not to endanger those blessings by intermarriage with Canaanites like Esau attempted to do or would have done. Spiritual purity has to be maintained in all of the generations. Another review, a little bit more, the promises of the covenant confirmed at Bethel. Jacob's vision at Bethel was based on God's pure grace. God appeared to Jacob to assure him of his promise of blessing and protection, prompting in Jacob a marvelous worshipful ascribing of worth in response to what he saw there. He vowed loyalty after that. And in this passage, it answers the question of whether the Lord was also the God of Jacob, and it shows how Jacob's outlook was dramatically changed. Jacob stopping for the night on his way to the Aramean uncle Laban at Haran in Padan Aram, dreamed of angels on a stairway extending to heaven. The point of the story is that God was present with Jacob wherever he went. This was symbolized by the ladder, explained in words by God and recognized in faith by Jacob. We're seeing the beginning of the maturing of Jacob and his character. God reiterated to Jacob the covenant made with Abraham and Isaac, promising him the land, descendants as numerous as the dust and universal blessing through him. God also promised to protect and to be with Jacob while he was out of the land and to see that he returned. Jacob's worshipful response included A, having fear before the Lord, B, erecting a memorial stone, the pillar. This is what Jeff talked about, this pillar where he was kind of a side sleeper. C, consecrating the stone by anointing the top of it with oil, again, sleeping on his side per Jeff. D, naming the place Bethel or House of God to commemorate the event. E, making a vow in which he expressed for the first time his faith in the Lord. The Lord will be my God, he said, and promising to tithe. All these enhance the central idea of God's protecting presence. This is fascinating to me. This is Jacob's prayer broken down into the various components. Again, Jeff mentioned this last time. So the structure of Jacob's prayer that he prays once he sees this vision of the ladder is broken down into three-part pieces. He says, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, verse 21, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then this promise I give, the Lord shall be my God, and the stone pillar shall be God's house, Bethel. And all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So let's check the progress of this. God has already promised that he's going to be with them. He has already promised that every step of the way, God will be there with him. And of course, he's eating, he's well fed, and he's got clothes on, so you can check that box also. And then the Lord shall be my God. Yes, he makes this promise. Then the Lord shall be my God. But the Lord is his God. And then he erects this stone pillar as a display of his burgeoning faith in the Lord. And then the last one, number three, all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. Has that been fulfilled? It's unknown. I hope he was honorable with his finances. He certainly becomes a wealthy man. So we'll leave it up to you and your search of the scriptures to verify that. But that's Jacob's prayer, this kind of thin prayer that he prays as he begins to, his knowledge of the Lord begins to deepen. Let's go down one more. In the next chapters 29 through 33, they form a block that displays how God kept his promise and blessed Jacob abundantly. They also show how God disciplined this patriarch in the process. So here's the outline of chapter 29, there are 30 verses here. The meeting of Rachel and the deception by Laban. Section one, the first 14 verses, Jacob meets Rachel. Verses 15 through 30, Jacob marries Leah and Rachel. And then finally, verses 31 through 35, the children of Jacob. As you can see from this map here, Jacob's meeting of Rachel parallels Isaac's meeting of Rebecca. It's almost identical, the path, or it is identical, really. You can see that Jacob's travels are in green, Isaac's travels are in purple, and Abraham's travels are in red. This is the story of Jacob in five acts. Act number one, he's born, he has conflict with Esau. Act number two, he travels to Haran. Act number three, he is in Padan Aram. Act four, he travels back to Canaan. And finally, act five, evil in Shechem. And our brother Joel will be doing that chapter. Let's take a look here. This is an actual picture of the wells of Padan Aram, or what's left. There's another grainy shot. I'm not sure if the tower in the back is the same tower, but it's kind of a barren, kind of a dry land with some vegetation there. Let's take a look at this first section, the first 14 verses, Jacob meets Rachel. The structure and content of this chapter reflect the significance of the Bethel experience. Jacob has been fleeing from Esau, and now he's looking for a bride. This change in purpose was due to God's promise given to him at Bethel. His goal or quest now is the fulfillment of part of that promise, specifically the seed, while Jacob was outside of the land. Additionally, after the gracious experience of the vision of God, Jacob's spirit was now generous, forgiving, unselfish. He has a new outlook. Let's read these first 14 verses together. I have the New King James. So verse 1, chapter 29 says, "So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east, and he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth." Verse 3, "Now all of the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. Jacob said to them, 'My brethren, where are you from?' And they said, 'We are from Haran.' And then he said to them, 'Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?' And they said, 'We know him.' So he said to him, 'Is he well?' And they said, 'He is well. Look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep.' Verse 7, then he said, 'Look, it is still high day, and is it not time for the cattle to be gathered together? Water the sheep and go and feed them.' But they said, verse 8, 'We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together, and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep.' Verse 9, now while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Then Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Verse 13, then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him into his house. And so he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, 'Surely you are my bone and flesh.' And he stayed with him for a month." Here we have significantly Jacob's meeting of Rachel parallels his father's meeting of Rebekah, as we said before. And certainly Rebekah's brother Laban would have remembered how God led Eliezer. This is the servant of Abraham. And remember, Abraham had Eliezer put his hand under his thigh and promise that he would find a wife for his son Isaac. Yet in this narrative, unlike chapter 24, the narrative doesn't emphasize divine leadership, but it's implied here. Here was a man who received a marvelous vision. He knew God's plan to bless him and lead him. So Jacob continued on his mission. Literally, the text reads, he picked up his feet. And then all of these supposed circumstantial events, which are not circumstantial, but are divine led, he quote unquote happened on a spot where a well was located. It quote unquote happened to be near Haran. Haran is where Laban lived, chapter 29, verse 5. and Laban's daughter, Rachel, just quote unquote, happened to be coming to the well, verse 6. The timing was the work of the loving sovereign God here, who was leading all the way. The fact that this meeting took place at a well is significant because a well is often associated with God's blessing. Here's a couple of examples. Genesis 16, 13 through 14 says, then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees." For she said, quote, "Have I also seen him who sees me?" End quote. Therefore, the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. Observe, it is between Kadesh and Bered. So that is Sarah's handmaiden, Hagar, who has this miraculous thing happen to her right at the point of death. Genesis 21, verse 19 says, and God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Genesis 26, 19 through 25, also Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found a well of running water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, the water is ours. So he called the name of the well Esek, because they quarreled with him. Esek means quarrel. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one also. So he called its name Sitna, which means hatred or enmity. Verse 22, and he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehoboth, because he said, for now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. Then he went up from there to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for my servant Abraham's sake. So he built an altar there and called in the name of the Lord, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants built a well. Let's look at verses 7 through 14 again in Genesis 29. When Jacob watered Laban's flocks, there was this note of anticipation. If we look at the next couple of chapters, we see how Laban and his flocks prospered in Jacob's presence. And this is in contrast to Laban's lazy shepherds, including his sons. Jacob was generous. He was zealous and industrious. Jacob had a mission and a quest, that burning goal implanted by prior experience. It drove him to succeed. In verses 11, 13, we have the kissing of relatives here. It was this proper greeting. In calling Jacob his own flesh, verse 14, flesh and blood, Laban possibly was adopting Jacob, his nephew. So everything seems to be so well and good at this point. Let's take a look at verses 15 through 30. I'm just going to read them again. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Verse 16, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel, and so he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your youngest daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and this is a classic verse, and they seemed only a few days to him, because of the love he had for her. Verse 21, then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. 22, and Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Verse 23, now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this that you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? And Laban said, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years. And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob also went into Rachel. And he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. So Jacob's joyful prospect of marrying Rachel turned by Laban's deception into a nightmare. I remember one time I was talking to a well-known Bible teacher, and he was talking about these young men in his assembly were always coming to him and saying, you know, I found the woman I'm going to marry. And he would always say to them, is that right? Did you ask her about it? Well, no, but I know this is God's will. He said, be careful, because if it's not God's will, this will turn into a nightmare. It's kind of funny, but in Laban, Jacob met his match, didn't he? And also his means of discipline. Jacob has deceived his own brother and his father, and now he's deceived by his own mother's brother. And should this really be a surprise? The whole family is deceptive, isn't it? Aren't they? Think about Abraham with Pharaoh. Here's, I'll just read a couple of verses. This is verse 17 of Genesis 12. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Here is Abraham with the king of Gerar. Verse 7, I forgot the chapter here, chapter 20. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife. This is God talking to the king Gerar Abimelech. For he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you will surely die, you and all who are yours. So Abimelech rose early in the morning, called all the servants, and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were very much afraid. And Abimelech called Abram and said to him, what have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done. Then Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you have in view that you have done this thing? There is a portion in 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 22 that I always remember. This is Eli talking to his corrupt sons, and he says this, no, my sons, for it is not good, it's not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. And if one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? You know, when I was in high school, we would joke around a lot. I wasn't a believer and stuff. And sometimes you would have these kids, we were probably 9th grade, 10th grade or whatever. Sometimes a kid would get angry and he would say, you know, you don't stop this, you're a dead man. But this is serious business. Usually the kid that says that is a blowhard, but this is serious business. This is the Lord threatening a king to destroy his kingdom over the deception of Abraham. And he does that twice. Not only that, his son Isaac does this again with the king of Gerar. Here's a quote. It says, and Abimelech said to Isaac, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us. So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall certainly be put to death. So deception kind of runs in their family here. And Laban has cheated Jacob. And so what follows is 20 years of repetitious hard labor, affliction, and deception. This all lies ahead for Jacob, and it's formative in formulating his character. So through Laban, Jacob receives his own medicine of duplicity. Jacob's tenacity showed that he counted these as minor setbacks. The key here is that God took him and developed his character through these trials. And of course, every believer has things that happen to them. I'm just speculating, certainly for me, that you've done in the past where you're mature or whatever it is that you regret. And yet, even though these things were not God's will, he does use these things in our lives to develop us or to teach us certain things. God turned the fruits of his deception into blessing, and God built the promised seed, the nation of Israel. So Jacob's plan was to work 7 years for Rachel as his wife. And those years went quickly because of his love for her. Interesting note, the wives of each of the first three patriarchs were beautiful. Think of Sarah in chapter 12, Rebecca chapter 24, and Rachel in chapter 29. Just a note. When the time came for the wedding feast, hearts were merry, spirits were high. But in the night, Leah, Rachel's older sister, is substituted. Here's the Bible Knowledge commentary. And I quote, this was a masterpiece of shameless treachery. In other words, unloved Leah is given to a man in love with Rachel. No matter how angry Jacob was, he couldn't undo this. Now, the one who was tricked would understand how Esau felt. And Laban gives this technicality of local custom as the reason, the explanation, the justification. It is not right to marry the younger before the older. How this must have really frustrated and angered Jacob. And once again, we can see this comparison. In his younger days, the younger brother deceptively pretended to be the older brother before his father, Genesis 27. Here's the Bible Knowledge Commentary once again. If social convention were to be set aside, it should be by God, not by deception. And so we have Laban's stinging words, and left without comment, really. And so Jacob goes to work. The Bible comments many times on the fact that what a man sows, he reaps, Galatians 6, verse 7. Some have called this irony or poetic justice, but it is more than that. It is divine retribution in which there is often a measure-for-measure turn of affairs. In other words, God orders the affairs of men to set things right. With Jacob, this deception was perfectly fitted. It was divine punishment to bring his own craftiness before his eyes. So under deception, Jacob presents himself as the firstborn, and now under deception, the firstborn daughter is deceptively presented to him and as the secondborn. After Jacob's anger kind of wears off, he recognizes the deception and he accepts it and he goes to work. Jacob finishes out the bridal week, Genesis 29, verse 27, at the end of which he's given Rachel. And if we think about it, he gets two wives in 7 days, not a bad deal. Each daughter is given a servant, a custom common in that society. Leah is given Zilpah, Rachel is given Bilhah. Then Jacob works another 7 years in which he owed Laban in return for Rachel. Unfortunately, Jacob is not the only believer who needed the Lord's discipline. We all at times, or not we all, but some people have a Laban in their own lives, and it's used again to develop that character. So we have the final portion here of the study. This is verses 31 to the end of the chapter. Let me read these verses. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son, and she said, because the Lord has heard that I'm unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will love me. Become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah. And then she stopped bearing. So if you remember, Phil Kern did a beautiful job with his exposition on Jacob's life. And you can see all of the competition that occurs here between two sisters. So the desire for affectionate approval often leads down dangerous paths. There is a contest of childbearing between Rachel and Leah that begins. And it shows this just yet another struggle within this family. And the story is about the cravings of human beings for love and recognition and the price of preventing it. So we just look at this final portion here in Genesis 29. In his family relationships, Jacob still sowed some bitter seeds. He was cool and unaffectionate toward Leah, his unwanted wife. But God was well aware what Leah was bearing here. He was very aware of it. Rachel, like Sarah and Rebecca before her, was barren. Verse 31 on previous chapters were 16 and 25 for Sarah and Rebecca. Leah is very fast in producing or birthing four sons. And this can be contrasted with the long waits for children in the earlier patriarchs. The story of these births is just sad. But the chapter proves that God is the giver of life in spite of human efforts. Leah names her firstborn Reuben, indicating that the Lord has seen her misery. This is just, the naming of these sons is just sad. I mean, it just really moves your heart here. In Hebrew, the wordplay also means, now at last my husband will become attached to me. And this naming shows her hope, but also her consolation with her child and her faith, her hope of trying to draw near to a husband that really didn't want her, and her consolation that she has a child. The key factor here is that Jacob never saw her affliction, but God did. Jacob is just consumed with himself. The Bible has more of these names with messages. Beer Lahai Roy is literally the well of the living one who sees me in Genesis 16. Simeon was so named because the Lord heard that Leah was not loved. God heard was her testimony and faith to his provision. Think about the name of Ishmael, which means God hears. Levi was named for her hope that her husband would become attached to her, but it was not to be. Judah was her consolation. She would be satisfied to praise the Lord, for Judah means let him be praised. So Leah exhibits this genuine faith during her affliction, like so many other women focus or profile in the Bible who were barren at first and go through this affliction, this process, and then the Lord ultimately rewards them. And so we come really to the end of the chapter. There's really kind of no good place to stop. Next week, we will pick up with Rachel's sons through Bilhah and the continuation here. Let's take a look at just a couple of additional slides here. This is Jacob's family tree. These are the children by Leah, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. These are the children by Bilhah, Dan, and Naphtali. Jacob's family tree continues with Zilpah, Gad, and Asher were born from her. And then finally from Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin are born. Which of his wives or handmaidens produce two of the key tribes in Israel? The woman that bears both the tribe that from which priests come from and the tribe from which the kings come from.
Leah,
that's right. The one that was unloved. She's the one that, you know, that bore graces with children that ultimately go on to, I should say, a line, tribal line that goes on to produce this magnificence. Now, the sons of Jacob, they're not the greatest characters in the world, but certainly it's quite interesting. As we wrap up, it's interesting, this portion that talks about Jacob and character development. It's one of the most fascinating parts of the Bible with respect to this patriarch here. And as Dave McLeod once said in the past, God is not hesitant to trash his own biblical characters. He presents them warts and all. And yet there's always a good ending, isn't there? Any thoughts as we conclude for tonight? We'll pick it up on Genesis 30 next time.
Yeah, Ray, I just, often when you read these stories, you know, and you see, like you mentioned, the deception that was in these families, how, of course, deception is sin, and but, you know, the effect it has on the innocent, you know, you think of, your heart goes out to Leah. Here, you know, she desired to be loved by her husband, but never receiving that love, and everything was done in a deceiving way. And even though the Lord blessed her, I think ultimately she just, most of all, she just wanted to have that love to be accepted, you know, and she was, you know, and then she was born too with, you know, a little bit of a handicap. She was with her, she had poor eyesight, you know, and you just think about the, you know, the consequences of, you know, when there's this deception involved, and who's ever involved with that never sees the consequences of those innocent people that are impacted by that. And the it's really a tragedy, you know, when you see those things. But in spite of that, you know, we see where the Lord did, you know, he fulfilled his purpose and blessed. But you just think of the innocent people that were involved in that. And even Rachel too had quite a bit of pain. You think of the division between Rachel and her sister, you know, her being envious of her sister being able to bear children, and she couldn't at the time. So,
yeah, I think another factor is that, you know, being a broker, you know, in real estate, we owe duties to clients. It's the code of ethics. And you would never reveal your seller's motive to a buyer. That's just a no-no. And yet you think about Jacob, who in sincerity goes to his uncle and just kind of reveals his motive. You know, he wants to marry Rachel, and Laban just takes advantage of that. You know, he understands the wealth from the family that he comes from, and the guy's just, you know, pure and simple, just looking to just deceive his own nephew. This is, I mean, just think about the wedding night and or I should say the morning after, and just the rage of just having been deceived when you've come to a man, stayed with him for a month, poured out your heart. But it's kind of the way it is. Yeah. I'm working out in a field, sweating, cold, is Laban's lazy sons doing nothing, basically. Just the resentment that must have built is...
So, Ray, I think Jeff would make a big deal about how old Jacob is at this point. I think he said he's 75 when he left.
Yeah.
Right? And so now he's got to work 7 years. So that makes him over 80 years old when he gets married.
These guys are vigorous.
Can you imagine somebody being 80 years old and then still being interested in being married and all that? It's just hard to
think of.
Hard to relate to.
Yeah, Abram is 75 when he hears the call of God. It's hard to understand. And of course, Moses at 120 was like a vigorous young man. His eyesight was as good as it ever was. Any other thoughts?
Well, it's sort of interesting that Leah has six of the sons plus a daughter, and the other three have two each. Wonder why that is. And then Joseph and Benjamin, two important tribes, also come from Rachel. Not sure if the other two women had significant tribes, really.
Did you take me off of share? Oh no, I'm still. Am I still on share screen here? Oh
yeah,
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of these tribes get just kind of assimilated. You know, certainly, but I thought it was significant that out of Leah, certainly two really important tribes come from her. And of course, as you mentioned, Fred, Rachel also, but yeah, it's a sad story with Leah. Anyone else? Okay, well then we'll stop here for tonight.